I'm Zach. I'm a musician, a former worship leader. I helped destroy Mars Hill Church. I'm not really sure what I believe anymore, and I'm okay with that.
I'm Dave. I'm a Bible theology nerd, an occasional teacher, a movie buff. You, Zach, and our listeners might be very excited to know that over the summer I was not indicted, and I'm an evangelical.
Indeed. Oh, and this is Veterans of Culture Wars.
Hey, so we're back. Veterans of Culture Wars is a podcast where we have conversations about evangelical Christianity, and we welcome you to the podcast, whether you are a believer or not. We are back from summer break, summer hiatus. Zach, I actually haven't talked to you in a while. We message and stuff on social media, but how are you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing great, if I can say that. I don't know. That was kind of a knee-jerk reaction to say that. I just got to have my wife and I just got to fly somewhere without our children for the first time since our first anniversary back in 2007.
Wow. Okay, so this is happy 16th anniversary.
It wasn't for our anniversary. It's just that's how long it had been since we'd done any of this. We went to San Francisco for 3 days, and it was really nice. Sort of a few different things that fit into activities and interests of late. My wife Amanda has started DJing with me occasionally. And so we went to like four different record stores and found some good stuff there. And also, I've gotten really into tiki stuff, tiki drinks, tiki bars. And the Bay Area is one of the epicenters of where that whole thing kicked off. It was sort of like two different bars, one in Oakland and one in Huntington Beach, I think, which is, you know, more south.
Further down south, near LA, yeah.
But it was sort of like at the same time, like two different things. There's, you know, Don the Beachcomber and Trader Vic's open up places at the same time, and so there's all these, like, tiki culture still a big thing in San Francisco. And when we booked the flight, like, I didn't realize that I was into tiki stuff yet, so or that it was such a big thing down there. And so it worked out really well. We went to three different bars. One of them we went to twice because it was right by our hotel. You may recall when we had the Mayfields on, I had just had my first experience going to a tiki bar at Disneyland. And Crispin said that when he gets back from Disneyland, he likes to make tiki drinks to deal with the return to the real world or whatever. That's his little tradition. And that just kind of got the wheels turning in my head. I've always just sort of, when people ask me what I'd like to drink or what I like, I'm like, beach drinks, like girly drinks, sweet stuff. Like I never liked beer, never liked wine. I worked very hard to sort of like cider, but I don't love it. And
same.
It just, the things just kind of clicked. I actually tweeted out the other day that being in like hyper masculine evangelical spaces, Mars Hill and stuff, as somebody that didn't like beer or wine was really hard. It was weird to feel like an outsider in that regard, like to not fit in because I didn't drink at church was just very strange. But I didn't like it. I didn't like beer. I think it's gross.
I've never been a big drinker either. Still am not to this day. I mean, I'll have a drink here and there. But yeah, that's interesting. And I don't know if it ever felt hard for me. I was just at Mars Hill for 3 years. But yeah, there were a bunch of guys at Mars Hill and really just generally in reform spaces, and I'm sure beyond, that didn't just like beer. They had like competitions and always bragged about the beer that they were brewing or making.
I mean, the first home group that I attended was referred to as Triple B, Beers, Bros, and Bible. And like, I'm okay with like two of those, but the other I don't really care about. But they still let me.
It's the BBB, like I think of the Better Business Bureau, but that's definitely not what it was.
To me, it reached a bizarre obsession level at Mars Hill, where I definitely did not believe that these beer obsessed reform bros weren't drinking to excess. You know, they'd always talk about it, that God's, oh, it's great to just appreciate God's creation, and beer is just the pinnacle of what we can experience in beverages, but you got to make sure not to drink too much and not go to excess. I'm like, all right, well, you're like drinking like every day. Like, to me, that seems like excessive, but whatever. That's not something that matters to me anymore, but it was just, it's fun to realize that, hey, here's the world, the types of drinks that I enjoy. And so I got to try a bunch of different ones. We went to one that's among the best in the world. The owner of this place, Smuggler's Cove, has put out like the gold standard book on rum and tiki drinks and all this. He's won a billion.
And
awards.
That's a great name too. That's
Smuggler's
a great name.
Smuggler's Cove. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's good stuff. Martin Kate is his name. I've been getting that obsessive thing where, like, you know, I'm buying tools of the trade and watching YouTube videos. And so I know, like, I know now that the way to properly, and this is a Martin Kate method, that they've sort of changed the way that you would light a drink on fire, like if you're having like a volcano bowl or something, is you soak a square of toast in lemon extract. And when you light that, it gets a high flame that burns for quite a while and looks great. They used to just like burn like a high alcoholic rum or something, and it'd be more of a clear flame. It wouldn't be as tall. See, I'm learning all this stuff. It's fun. So I got
you're at the ground level. You're constructing your theology of tiki drinks. That's what you're doing.
I'm doing something. I don't know. Starting to think about like maybe some parts of my house I could decorate with some of this sort of decor. You know.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. But
what I'm hearing is Crispin Mayfield planted the seed, and then it sounds like San Francisco Smuggler's Cove for fully converted you to the tiki drinks.
Yeah. Well, and it was fun that it was something that my wife and I could both enjoy. You know, like we've always liked mid-century cultural artifacts and things, and you know, she had been sitting on this vintage fabric she had found at a Goodwill a couple of years ago, I think, and knowing we're going to be going to, in particular, this spot, the Tonga Room, which has been there since like the 50s or whatever, she decided to sew a dress from scratch from this vintage fabric. She sewed a matching purse with like bamboo handles and like made her own earrings, picked up and painted some shoes to match the fabric of the dress and the purse. Like, she was like all decked out and getting all sorts of compliments from folks there. It was really fun. So yeah, it was something that we could both get into. So both, you know, the tiki stuff, the DJing stuff, like it's things that she and I are getting to do together, and that's really nice.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We'd had a conversation a few weeks ago where she was like, hey, if somebody like asked you what you think the secret is to staying married a long time because, you know, we're old enough where we have had friends get divorced and stuff. And, you know, everybody's got different reasons for that, whatever. I was just like, I don't know. I think just like curiosity, like in your own life, like finding things of interest. So, you know, keep your mind going, like discovering new things, and then remaining like curious about your spouse as they go through those same things. So she develops interests, I developed interests, and sometimes those don't overlap as much, and sometimes they do, and we get to do them together, and that's great.
There you go. But there's curiosity, even if you're not really interested in something, you're at least trying to communicate and be curious about what it is that makes the spouse passionate about the thing, right? Yeah. But it does help. I mean, people haven't asked Michelle and I that question yet. We're at 11 years this year. Maybe we will eventually get to that place where people are asking us that question. But yeah, I think just mutual interests, things that you can do together that you both love and you're both passionate about, is definitely a key. And also being open, that can change over time as well. There, you know, with kids and everything that comes, I mean, life is constantly changing. So it's developing those things. I think that was good advice, developing those things and staying curious. And if you love somebody and you're committed to them, it's being into what they're into to a certain extent, even if you wouldn't be into it on your own. So,
hey, so we've been talking for a few minutes and we haven't introduced a guest. What's up with that? What is this? What's going on?
I had that thought in my mind before I asked you how you are doing. But this is the first podcast that I think just you and I have recorded with no guests, probably since, was it the Dave Ramsey episode that we did? And that was before we had guest Amy Fritz on. I think you and I just did an episode on Dave Ramsey and just how wild, putting it nicely, his organization is. So
yeah, we did like half a dozen time. Or so before we started doing guests, right. And it's been guests ever since. That's a more involved process. You know, we're reading books, we're preparing, we're doing all this stuff. And you and I thought that it may be nice to have more informal, shorter conversations, just the two of us, about things going on with the show, things going on in our lives, things going on in the world of evangelicalism, or, you know, upcoming guests we're excited about, what we're reading, what we're watching, and we thought this may be the right sort of thing to have as a exclusive for Patreon supporters. So this first one is sort of a just getting back in the swing of things. We've had our summer break, just catching up, talking about what's been going on. But we're going to be doing this, sounds like we'll be doing it monthly, and that'll be there just for the Patreon supporters. So that's patreon.com/VCWpod. I mean, we've been doing this for 3 years now. It's taken up a lot of our time and energy, and it's pretty fulfilling. But we would appreciate some support.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
even coordinating with guests, like basically emailing or messaging back and forth, trying to set up dates and times, because people who publish a book or even people who are podcasters are very busy like us. And most of those people have lives outside of what they're doing. Like they have, you know, day jobs or whatever, and they're, you know, writing a book. Authors, contrary to popular opinion, don't get paid that much. You know, they go on a lot of podcasts trying to get their work and their passion out there to engage people with it. But there's not, you know, what's the average author? Like if you're lucky, you maybe sell 5,000 copies of your book. And that's if you're really, really lucky. I mean, people think of Stephen King or John Grisham, these guys that sell millions of copies, but that's really a tiny percentage of authors. Most authors are just everyday people like us, or like people listening to this show. So yeah, all that to say, we're busy. It's a lot of work. And then as Zach and I have said before, we try to read the books of every single guest, and or at least good portions of them. And we often dive back into other podcast interviews to try and find different conversation angles that maybe other people haven't thought of yet or haven't brought up. We do a lot of work on the show, and we would definitely appreciate any support you can give. Please give us money if you appreciate the show. And we would definitely just love your support, and thank you in advance. And like Zach was saying, what you will get is we will have some episodes just with us, and we'll talk about where we were at in our process. We'll talk about things that we are watching. We may do a few episodes where we watch a movie. I haven't really talked to Zach about this, but I don't know if we'll watch something like Sound of Freedom and then do a Patreon episode where we talk about what we think. But like I said, I haven't mentioned that to Zach, and I don't know if we want to actually watch
that sounds fun. Also, you know, you converted when you were 14, so I thought it may be fun to make you experience some of the evangelical culture of my childhood that you didn't experience.
Fun angle too.
So
yep,
that's an idea. You know, maybe we'll
I got a little bit of VeggieTales, but I think that was coming out in the 90s. Phil Vischer and his team was putting those out kind of around when I was converted. But like Bible Man, some of the 80s hair bands, you know, I didn't really get into.
I mean, Bible Man was the 90s. Like, I met Bible Man when he was promoting his inaugural VHS tape or whatever in the mid 90s.
Your claim to fame. There you go.
I was already too old for that when that came out.
Cool.
But yeah, no, I mean, I can, there's records you could listen to. I could make you watch High Tops finally. I know we've talked about wanting to do an episode on that for the longest time. There's been other podcasts that have covered it since we started the show, and that's been nice to see. But that was like my favorite. It was my favorite Christian musical as a kid. You know, everybody's got their favorite Christian musical, right?
I have not seen it. So if we do that, we'll have to get my first impression after watching it. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's good stuff. What else can they expect behind the paywall? Spicier content?
We'll start you out with one tiki drink.
I have thought that maybe going forward, I will prepare myself a drink before we record. I got some lovely tiki mugs to drink out of now.
Cool.
But you know, some of the drinks can take some prep. So my next step is learning how to make my own syrups. You know, I can make a simple syrup, but orgeat, falernum.
Yeah.
What's the other? I don't know. There's a whole bunch of different syrups used in those. I don't know. There's other stuff we can go into.
Totally.
On this trip in San Francisco, I was thinking of this because I saw former guest Caitlin Beatty talking about traveling through Europe and going to a spa and being shocked to discover that it was a co-ed and nudity required spa, and she wasn't comfortable with that, so she left. But on our trip, my wife and I chose to go to a co-ed clothing optional banya, a Russian spa. I'd been to a banya before that wasn't clothing optional.
The one you've been to before required nudity?
The one I'd been to before did not. No. It didn't allow for nudity. The first one. Yeah, I went to one in New York with a buddy. That's the first time I went to a banya. And, you know, they're famous for you can pay to have them, like, hit you with oak branches and stuff. But mostly it's about, like, I didn't do that.
That seems weird to me.
Like, super hot saunas and then a super cold immersion tub. So you go directly from, you know, 150 50, I don't know the temperatures they use, but you go directly from a, like a super hot steam room to like going in a super cold pool, and it's quite a shock to the system. But as
yeah,
sort of been thinking about, you know, being embodied and making my body experience things, and so
it sounds like proof that you are alive, that you feel that sensation.
Yeah, going there a couple of years ago, it was quite something. And you know, my wife's gone to a Korean spa up here for a while that, like, everybody's naked, but it's just women. So I've never been able to go with her. But then we found this spot that was in San Francisco. I'm like, we can do this together. Could be uncomfortable, could be a little weird, but you know, I like the idea of doing things that make me acutely aware of this body that I'm in. And it was a very nice experience. I got a scrub, which I've never really even gotten like a massage or anything. That's never been comfortable for me. I've always had a hard time experiencing those. And I wasn't sure if I was going to get one of those until I went to a wedding and was seated next to a massage therapist that was telling me that sometimes her work involves just helping people get comfortable with the idea of any form of touch, that it's not even working on muscles, but just, all right, I'm going to put my hand on the back of your shoulder and just press lightly here. How does that feel? And people that have had some sort of bodily trauma or some reason to be totally like disassociated from their body have to go in these small steps. And I've sort of felt like evangelicalism did that to me to some extent. And so I saw this as a therapeutic opportunity. And it felt very therapeutic.
And let's go back real quick. Cause when you say evangelicalism did that to you, and you kind of, you've talked about this, I think, in different pieces throughout our show. But for our listeners, maybe in one place, what do you think was the source of that disembodiment that you got either from the theology or the ideas in evangelicalism?
I think original sin. I think the idea of my body being the source of so much evil made it so the easiest thing to do is like pretend I didn't have one. You know, I was terrified of getting in dating relationships in high school. Like once I went to public school, I just assumed everybody was a non-Christian. And so I didn't want to try to date anybody because they'd all be dangerous people that would, you know, try to get me to have sex or something. And I was, you know, committed to not doing that. And I just think I developed this distance from myself where like, I wouldn't even really like take medicine when I got sick unless my wife told me to. I wouldn't think to do that. I wouldn't think to take care of my body. I would just endure the sickness until she'd say, "Hey, have you taken anything?" And I'd be like, "Oh, no, I haven't." I should discounted so much of what my body was trying to tell me because I feel like I learned that it was not a source to be trusted. You know, intuition is not truthful. It could be the lies of the devil, you know? And so, yeah, I just felt like I didn't like having a body. I wish I didn't have to deal with that part of human experience, and was looking forward to having a regenerated heavenly body that would be perfect. And so now I wouldn't say that I'm embracing body positivity, but body neutrality, of the recognizing this is what I have to experience the world in, and it has functions and purposes, and this is what I got. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to,
what's the difference between body neutrality and body positivity?
I mean, body neutrality is a reckon, you know, it's not pushing you to love your body unconditionally in whatever shape it may come in and all that, but to appreciate and take care of it at least.
I see. Okay.
So I'm not at a point where I feel like I love my body, but I'm at least taking care of it and appreciating what it can do.
I see. Okay. You're talking about your trip to San Francisco. Michelle and I took a small trip of our own, not very far, out to Snoqualmie Falls and Salish Lodge that is out there for our anniversary, actually. Nice. And it was only 2 days. Wish it were longer. We did a spa. They had like a waterfall hot tub that was just private to me and her. So that was really cool. That was a nice feature. And you know, we did some hiking. We walked down Snoqualmie Falls. There's a viewpoint up on the ledge for those who haven't been there. This is east of Seattle for those of you who don't live in Seattle. And then there's a path that you can kind of a switchback trail a little bit through the woods. You can walk down and then you can walk out on this boardwalk and see the falls from the view of this boardwalk from the bottom. So this is it's a pretty common space for people who live in Seattle. I'd say most people have probably at least gone out there one time or so. We also went into the town of North Bend, which surprisingly has had some different movie and cinema experiences being filmed in North Bend, in this town that, what would you say, Zach, is like 30 miles east of Seattle, just out on I-90?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, no, I mean, it's famously where much of Twin Peaks was filmed, that,
yes,
and the Salish Lodge.
This movie called The Vanishing from 1993 that has Jeff Bridges, Kiefer Sutherland, and Sandra Bullock was filmed at least a little bit in North Bend. As a matter of fact, where Jeff
the
Bridges,
the one that's a remake of like a,
yes,
Swedish movie or something.
I've seen Spore Loose.
I've seen Spore Loose. I haven't seen The Vanishing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, The Vanishing, certainly probably not in the pantheon of great movies. I kind of like it because I saw it with my dad when I was like 13. And Jeff Bridges' performance in it is actually really eerie, creepy, and good, I think. But yeah, where Jeff Bridges kidnaps Sandra Bullock is this gas station, and you can go to it in North Bend. Like, it was a real place. I think that the interior shots were probably done on a studio stage somewhere, but exterior in the parking lot with Mount Si in the background and everything was all right there in a gas station parking lot in North Bend. So that's kind of cool. But circling back around the Twin Peaks, we went to Tweed's Cafe and had breakfast, Michelle and I. I ordered biscuits and gravy. Speaking of body neutrality, probably not the most healthy thing to put into my body, but oh man, it was so good. It was one of the best biscuits and gravy that I've ever had. And I think in Twin Peaks, it was called the Double R Diner.
Yeah.
A lot of characters.
Yeah. I'm really glad that they did that new season of Twin Peaks, because until restoring the diner to how it looked during the filming of the original series, it had been made over with a Tweety Bird theme, where they had like 200 stuffed Tweeties hanging from the ceiling. It was horrendous. and as big Twin Peaks fans, my wife and I would visit occasionally, and it was rough.
Okay.
But now it's beautiful. It's wonderful in there.
All right. And maybe as a closing conversation topic question before we wrap it up here, right next to Tweed's Cafe was the North Bend Theater, and while we were there on our trip, the Barbie movie was still playing, so we went and saw an evening show of the Barbie movie. And I know that you saw the movie, I think twice at least, right, Zach? And so I wanted to get your recorded thoughts on the Barbie movie.
Yeah, it's been a minute, but yeah, I mean, it's I saw it the Tuesday after it came out, Took the whole family. I thought it's very good. I think for Greta Gerwig movies, Lady Bird is still the pinnacle for me.
It's a masterpiece, yeah.
But it is absolutely remarkable how much weirdness and real artistry Gerwig was able to get away with in a large budget studio feature, and I really commend
based
her
on
for that.
Massive selling toy line, yes.
Yeah, and you know, I don't really feel like people's feelings about the toy itself had a whole lot to do with the success of the movie. Otherwise, I don't think there'd be so many men going to see it. I'm aware of Barbie. Like, my sister didn't even have any Barbies. But the movie from the first trailer was clearly going to be something different and interesting. And I was on board, and you know, the whole Barbie product means nothing to me. So the product is the only thing that sort of holds the movie back from being able to be truly revolutionary, I think.
Interesting.
But
yeah, and they do play off of the toy line, because Will Ferrell and his corporate Mattel board are sort of some of the antagonists in the movie. And they do, maybe, I don't know, is it a fault of the movie, or are they just trying to be honest? They kind of talk about how Barbie means so many different things to so many different people. And as far as the message of feminism, it maybe is really mixed to some degree, as far as like what Mattel was trying to do with a product. Perhaps my wife Michelle's big thing with Barbie, and why she's discouraged our kids from playing with Barbies, is the body positivity thing. Just thinking that all women have to have a body like the typical Barbie doll,
right?
So that's one of the drawbacks of, and you know, we've even been down on our kids watching. I think there's a Netflix show or something on Barbie, but it's supposed to be really, really materialistic. And just all those kind of stereotypes about it. But the movie really isn't that at all. And going to see it, I knew it would be thoughtful coming from Greta Gerwig. It was also co-written by Noah Baumbach, who I'm often not a fan of, but
yes,
you know, I thought the screenplay was all right. And Barbie was good. I was surprised at how funny it was. I was laughing out loud in the theater. I thought there were some just great moments.
Well, the final Margo line is like Billy Wilder level, like all time.
Yes.
Great.
We
cut,
won't
cut to yeah. black final. Everybody's seen it. Like, we don't.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, about spoilers. You know, I'm here to see my gynecologist, that line and like the build up to her, you know, if you think she's going in for a job interview or something.
Yes.
Is phenomenal. It is so, so good. I had pretty minor gripes with it. The whole America Ferrera and her daughter, the real world stuff didn't land with me as much as the Barbie world stuff. Essentially, I wasn't really buying the America Ferrera character all that much. Didn't find her all that compelling. I found the way that they shot those scenes, like at the high school and all that, just maybe it was purposefully like this, but it felt like, I don't know, generic 90s TV lighting or something. Like, nothing really popped. But it was, you know,
yeah,
in contrast to how everything pops in Barbie Land.
Barbie Land.
So it's probably on purpose, but it's still, whether it's purposeful or not, it still kind of dragged for me the movie down a bit. But, you know,
Yeah, I thought the third act for me and also a little bit Michelle was sort of I it was a you know I was enjoying it for a while, and I mean the third act is good. This is a good movie. I think I gave it 3.5 stars.
I gave it four.
Okay. Yeah, but Michelle really didn't like that line of mothers stand still so their daughters can run. Because I think in Michelle's mind, if I'm understanding her correctly, she would say, why should I stop? Why shouldn't I continue to grow as a person, as a mom, as why shouldn't I continue to grow spiritually or in my career or whatever else? Like, I mean, we're all for our daughter and our son. We want them to grow up to be great human beings. And also, I think there's a thing where there was the monologue on feminism, which was a good monologue. But some people have taken the movie as this is kind of the leftist polemic, you know, kind of a preachy, I guess, a preachy movie. And I didn't really feel like most of it was super preachy. But you know how we would criticize God's Not Dead or something like that for being a preachy movie. And I don't know if I've really gathered my thoughts on this point or not. I am grateful that the Barbie movie exists, and I think it's a good message. I think it's a message that people need to think about. I think it's provocative in a very good way. But I don't know, should it have been more subtle, or the fact that it is direct and confrontational, is that what's needed in trying to make the point of Barbie land where women have power, and then the real world where we've never had a female president, you know, and men have dominated in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a fair amount of, you know, baby feminism, said very straightforwardly and inelegantly, I suppose one could say, like that monologue. You know, it didn't have to be presenting new ideas there, but those are new ideas to people that haven't encountered them. For people that, you know, are, you know, y younger girls sort of waking up to the realities of their place in the world and such like that. Things that are what older, more seasoned feminists may see as being too simple, are for a lot of people just right.
Yeah.
So I'm happy
Sometimes
for that.
art has to be bold, provocative, and has to come out and just say what needs to be said for sure. So, in that sense, I mean, this is a it's a deeper and more philosophical movie, which if you would have told me 3 years ago they were making a Barbie movie, I think whether right or wrong, and whether there's something wrong with me thinking this way, I think in my mind I would have thought, oh, I am not at all going to be interested in seeing a Barbie movie. I would think materialistic, something that's just not for me. But this very much was, like I said, very good. I was laughing. I think Greta Gerwig was a great person to direct and write this movie.
Yeah, I think it went well, and I think there's a lot of parallels between, you know, Ken realizing how great life could be under patriarchy for him. Just
Yeah.
thinking of, like, I wouldn't say that my attraction to Mars Hill had to do with that necessarily, but I think a lot of people are drawn to patriarchal theologies because of what's in it for them. And there can be sort of an eye-opening, aha, I get to be in charge and can justify it by the Bible says, if
Yeah.
I subscribe to this theology. We see a lot of that going on. And I like how ridiculous Ken became as he, you know, sank deeper into that. That
Yeah.
was nice, and culminating in the very like Gene Kelly-esque musical number, the "I'm Just Ken," that to me was like the high point of the movie. I think that was phenomenal.
it was certainly a lot of fun. And if you are among the minority that has not seen it, I would definitely recommend it. Yeah, you'll have a blast watching it, I'm sure. So
if you haven't seen it, you probably don't want to see it.
I actually, good point. Yeah. I think this is maybe someone who listened to Ben Shapiro's inaccurate rant on it.
Oh yeah. He predicted it was going to totally fall off the face of the earth in week two and be an absolute disaster. Yeah. It's
yeah, not so much.
Been enjoyable to see it do as much of the opposite of that as practically possible. So yeah. Well, absolutely. I gotta get back to work.
Yeah, me too. So this has, we have not had a guest, but this has been another episode of Veterans of Culture Wars. Please, again, we do have a Patreon. We will release some episodes of just Zach and I talking. We'll talk about movies that we're watching, updates as to what we think about spirituality, where we're at in that, or different conversations about what's going on in our lives, plus more. So please subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/VCW. Is it pod or hall?
Pod. Yeah, VCW
pod. Yeah. /VCW pod. On, I guess it's called X now, formerly Twitter. I am at Dave J. Lester. Zach is at Muzak, M-U-Z-A-C-H. You can also go to his website, muzak.bandcamp.com, and listen to some of his music. And now that we are a couple of months away from Christmas, you can buy one of his vinyl Christmas records, and I think we can pretty much guarantee it will be to you well before Christmas, so you can listen to it and experience it in your house. And I also have another podcast out. This is kind of a side podcast. I'm still going to be doing VCW Pod, obviously, with my good friend Zach, but my new second podcast is called Does the Bible Say That? And you can check that out most places where you get podcasts. What I'm doing is just talking about what the Bible says and what it means. So no sermons, no preaching or anything. Trying to just present the Bible to anybody, regardless of belief or non-belief, just kind of engaging with what the text says and what the book says. So you can check that out, Does the Bible Say That? Wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you so much for coming on down to the VCW just for this little bite-sized little morsel. And remember, the podcast is free. The Patreon podcast is not free. And in addition to that, you still need to tithe 10%.